I'd like very much to thank and congratulate all the people who've labored to bring this Brussels Tribunal into reality. Your work is of the utmost importance to the planet's hope for peace, and everything depends upon fulfilling that hope. I should also say that you're the true friends of the people of the United States, and we need your friendship and help. Of course, ours is the greatest responsibility to control our government, but as you see, despite all the advertising about the land of the free and the home of the brave, the government here pays little attention to the will of the people. The most important task that you have, as I see it, and I'll say for those who may not know that I've followed Iraq closely for many, many years. Went there in 1990, hoping to avoid the attack in 91. Went there during the attack in 91 and drove around for about 2,000 miles for a couple of weeks and saw the devastation of 88,500 tons of bombs. Been back every year since then, into the hospitals and all, to see the children dying from sanctions and from the growing intensity of the impact of depleted uranium as time gives it its chance to work on the bodies of the people of Iraq. Your greatest challenge is to identify the major crimes that the United States has been committed and document them as thoroughly as you can. Some are pretty clear, but let me run through those that come to mind as most important. History and just common sense tell us that a country that begins a war of choice, as President Bush calls this war, has committed a terrible crime. In the first international war crimes trials in history, at Nuremberg, beginning in the fall of 1945, the charter, which had been for Nuremberg, which had been drafted earlier, defined the greatest crime. It called it the supreme international crime, to be war of aggression. A war of aggression, first of all, is the initial crime against peace, because it's what ruptures the peace, it breaks the peace. The judgment from Nuremberg, which came in 1946, confirmed a war of aggression as the supreme international crime. And it defined the many aggressions that Nazi Germany had committed, beginning with the earlier ones in Austria and Czechoslovakia and then Poland and so many other countries, virtually all the countries in in West Europe. And finally, the Russian war, which the Germans tried to defend as being self-defense. And the Nuremberg Tribunal brushed aside, saying no one can believe that the blitzkrieg that was thrown upon Russia, or then the Soviet Union, on June 22, 1941, that rolled all the way to Moscow and Leningrad and Stalingrad, was self-defense. Look at Iraq. What could be more obvious than that this is a war of aggression. It was a war that you could tell President Bush and his key advisors, including Vice President Cheney and Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz and many others, wanted personally and badly. It was a personal crime. The crimes hardly end there. One of the worst crimes once a war starts is indiscriminate violence. I mean, violence just kills anybody. It's, of course, a violation of all international law that's ever addressed the subject, controlled primarily today by the Geneva Conventions. Shock and awe, by definition, is indiscriminate violence. You have to remember and you have to record how boastful the United States was about shock and awe, which is an advertisement for terrorist violence that's indiscriminate. You remember how many people they said you were killing at the time? Now they deny it pretty much, but how could all that bombing have been harmless? I mean, now they say, well, there's a lot of damage, but a lot of lives were taken. Shock and awe took at least 30,000 human lives. At least 5,000 were civilians. But you have to remember how military forces were battered and bombed for days. And those bombs weren't just fireworks. They were killers. We used 3 or 4 times more depleted uranium, if you can believe it, in 2003. When I say we, I mean the United States, than it did in 1991, even though it was clear that we had created a human catastrophe in which fetuses and infants and children and others, in ways that weren't seen before, no medical history of it, had tumors and leukemia and cancers and died. It took a few years for it to do its dirty work, and you don't know how long it'll last. Cluster bombs all over the place. Cluster bombs in hospital yards, and school yards, and deadly, indiscriminate, deliberate. Assassinations. The United States glorified assassinations. And then we wonder why someone like a religious leader, the head of Hamas, like Yassin, is assassinated. And why Israel feels it's justified. The United States started talking about assassinating Saddam Hussein and others immediately. The first bomb, if you recall, at the beginning of shock and awe, was an effort to assassinate him. And for a long time, we said we've got him and both of his sons. And then we weren't so sure, and then later on we decided we didn't get him there. But also the last bomb, quite interesting, on the outskirts of Baghdad, tried to get him, and again missed him. But we've glorified assassinations all over the place, summary executions. Just think of a little car with 6 people driving across the high plateau in Yemen, and we've got some fancy machine that can follow it without a pilot and zap it with a rocket and kill 6 occupants. You don't even claim you know who 5 of them were. You're not even sure who the 6th was. And what evidence do you have that he did anything? And if he did anything, what right do you have to assassinate him? And how can you hope to have peace on earth if that's the way the United States proceeds? We can't forget the sanctions. The people of Iraq lived for 12 years under the sanctions. U.S. propaganda blames Saddam Hussein, but the United States forced, by corrupt practices, the Security Council of the United States to impose those sanctions. And it brutalized that country for 12 years. It killed 1.5 million people at least, and more than half were children under the age of 5. And that's genocide, under the Genocide Convention. And those sanctions lasted from August the 6th, Hiroshima Day in 1990, until the end of shock and awe. And if you can't tell the world that that is genocide and must never occur again, then we're going to attack the poor people all over the world by greater impoverishment and hunger and sickness. And that is an enormous, deadly crime. Actually, the worst of all the weapons of mass destruction. Everything the United States has done has been lied about by the United States government to justify it. And then we said there were weapons of mass destruction. We'll show there are weapons of mass destruction. We'll find the weapons of mass destruction. But nobody in their right mind would believe that Iraq could have been a threat to anybody. It had the daylights bombed out of it in 1991. We claim we destroyed 80% of its military equipment. It had been inspected relentlessly for 6 years, in which the UN inspectors claimed they had destroyed 90% of the materiel that could have produced weapons of mass destruction. The country was so broken down that in 2002, the last full year before shock and awe, 25% of the infants born live had a birth weight of under 2 kilos. That's what the nation was brought down to. And it wasn't just those one-fourth. It was for 10 years a reduction in the size of birth weights for all of the children, or at least most of the children, the great majority of the children. A stunted generation, British doctors had called it, by 1996. Attention has to be paid. And here's the United States talking about weapons of mass destruction, and you have to look at this. Who possesses nearly all the weapons of mass destruction in the United States and in the world? The United States. Who has a huge nuclear arsenal? Who threatens the people with it constantly? Who can strike with its rocketry any place on Earth at any time with a nuclear warhead 10 times more powerful than the bomb that incinerated Nagasaki Umbel D? The United States. Who has stockpiled and researched and still researches biological and chemical and other weapons of mass destruction? And perhaps most important right now, while the United States is threatening other countries with war because it won't open up its country to inspection for development of potential nuclear weapons, what country is proudly announcing, and the Congress is being urged by the Bush administration to develop a new round of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons of mass destruction, tactical weapons that can take out 5 or 10,000 people, not 500,000 or a million. And if they develop them, they'll use them. That's why they want them. You can't use those great big ones because they're just too unbearably destructive. But they'll use the other ones. And if that's not condemned, if that's not stopped, you're facing it. So you got a big job. I really wish I could be there with you, but I made the mistake of tangling with a car that was bigger than me. And so here I am, thinking of you, wishing I were there, wishing you well. We need your message. We need it most of all in the United States, because the people here have the power, if they have the will, to stop this. And it is our responsibility, because it is our government, for better or for worse. And your findings will be of utmost importance here. We're going to be having demonstrations all the time. And we want the truth that comes out of the Brussels Tribunal to ring out through America, throughout the world. And particularly as the year works on, and the urgency of seeing that we don't have a longer period of time with a fanatic government that hasn't learned a thing. And if you don't think it hasn't learned a thing about wars of aggression, consider Haiti. You know, right in our own backyard, Haiti hadn't suffered enough. Who put Duvalier in? Who worked with Duvalier for 30 years? Who occupied the country from 1915 to 1933? Who's had Marines there anytime it's wanted to? Poor Haiti. And now we go in and we kidnap and remove the most popular and trusted figure among the Haitian people, President Aristide. And who do we install? A man that almost immediately says his abolition of the army was unconstitutional. Well, he abolished the army because he knew how bad the army was for the people. Another president in Costa Rica got a Nobel Prize for abolishing the Costa Rican army. And other countries, when he was threatened by Somoza and the Nicaraguan neighbor, stopped those invasions, first Venezuela and second the OAS, the Organization of American States itself. So we really need to work together to see that we can stop this aggression and stop this American war machine. Never forget the U.S. military expenditures. While they continue at anything near their current level, the United States will be a clear and present danger to all of the world. You can't spend trillions on arms and work for peace. You'll use them, and it's dangerous. Thanks for your work, and I hope to be with you next time and soon.